Hi, everyone. Apparently, in this coming episode of The Complete Works that you're about to listen to, we had some recording issues. And, well, okay, by we, I mean I had some recording issues. Apparently, the software we used to record everything switched settings to the microphone that's in my laptop instead of the nice microphone that I have. So there's a lot of background issues or background sounds and fuzz and some echo and stuff like that. So I apologize. Hopefully Mike with his audio magic can fix this. And thanks for understanding. Enjoy the episode.
Put your hands in the air!
On your knees.
When did you get out?
I missed you, Will.
It's good to see you again, Riley.
I dropped by Allison's.
What is she now, 14?
You look like your mom.
I have to go.
Hello?
Hello, Will.
Vincent?
I want my share. Of the $10 million that was going to change our lives.
There is no cash.
That daughter of yours, she grew up real nice.
Where is she?
Your former partner has kidnapped your daughter and is holding her in the cab.
I'm not being played by you.
I want to talk to her now. I want to hear her voice now.
This all depends on you.
To save his daughter.
There's no way you can steal $10 million. This isn't your life anymore.
I'm running out of time.
He has just 12 hours.
You don't think he's telling the truth?
No, I do not.
To steal $10 million.
Fire alarm just went off at Parrish Community Bank. I want this guy nailed.
Your father abandoned me.
I am going to make him pay for the both of us.
Honey, I'm going to get you out of this.
Nicolas Cage.
Time's up.
Stolen.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith. Joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCrescio.
How you doing today, Mike?
I am doing just great.
That is great. I'm pretty excited about this, actually, because the movie we're about to talk about today, Mike, I actually got this movie on DVD like 3 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, my parents gave it to me for my birthday right around the time we started this Nicolas Cage podcast because Nicolas Cage was in the movie and they were like, oh, well, here's the movie that with Nicolas Cage in it. You can talk about it on the podcast. And I was like, yeah, we're doing this in chronological order, though. So I'm really excited to watch this in 3 years.
And wow. I mean, what a thoughtful gift, though.
Yeah, yeah. I was very happy with it. And now I finally got to watch the movie. But I think before we get into the movie today, Mike, we need to talk about action movies in general, and more specifically, action movie knockoffs.
Got it.
Because the action movie knockoff is a proud tradition that goes back as far as time itself. It goes like this. You need one great movie with a very easy-to-follow formula to become a big hit, and then you get a whole slew of movies trying to recapture that magic. So Lethal Weapon cemented the buddy cop movie as a dynamic that we go back to over and over. We have done Die Hard everywhere, from a speeding bus to the White House. And right now, we're going through a bunch of movies inspired by John Wick, like Atomic Blonde, Upgrade, Hotel Artemis, Proud Mary, and so on. And one of the big action movie hits of the 21st century was, of course, Taken, which turned respected, critically acclaimed actor Liam Neeson into a B-movie action star. So after Taken came out, there were a lot of very similar movies with older actors going after that same genre thrill, like Edge of Darkness with Mel Gibson, The Gunman with Sean Penn, 3 Days to Kill with Kevin Costner, Lockout, our favorite movie with Guy Pearce.
Who could forget?
The Equalizer with Denzel Washington, and in 2012, Nicolas Cage got in on the Taken wave with a movie that wasn't even pretending to not rip off Taken. This movie is literally called Stolen.
You know, I obviously noticed Taken and Stolen are synonyms, but like this movie is just a stolen idea and I didn't even think of that.
It's a stolen idea for the movie Stolen. The movie stars Nicolas Cage as a guy whose daughter is kidnapped. You know, like in Taken. But only instead of being a former CIA officer, Cage is a former master thief and must use his particular set of skills to get the money to pay his daughter's ransom. And he does so by reuniting with the director of one of Cage's classic action films, Simon West, Mike, whose directorial debut was the 1997 cinematic masterpiece Con Air.
Remember when we had, when, like, the movies were good? we made it, Ma. Remember that?
Back
when, remember those times?
I do, that, the We Made It, Ma trilogy, man. Those were the glory days of this podcast. And honestly, I think this movie actually feels of a piece with Con Air in some ways, as well as with the movie we just talked about in the podcast, actually, Seeking Justice. I'm starting to think Nicolas Cage might have just been living in New Orleans for a couple of years.
That's got to be the only, that's the only explanation.
Because, man, he's in New Orleans a lot over the most recent movies, got to say. Maybe he just didn't want to leave. But Nicolas Cage plays Will Montgomery, a master thief who gets caught and goes to jail for 8 years. The cop who catches him, Tim Harlan, is played by Danny Houston, who is known now for stuff like American Horror Story and Wonder Woman, but he also made his feature debut as a bartender in Leaving Las Vegas. So there's a Cage reunion there, Cage's daughter, Allison Montgomery, is played by Sammy Gale, who has been in the main cast of Blue Bloods since the show began in 2010. And in Cage's old robbery crew, you've got Malin Ackerman playing Riley Sims. Of course, she was in Watchmen and Children's Hospital. She was hilarious on that show. Currently stars on Billions. MC Gainey plays Hoyt, the getaway driver. And of course, he was also in Con Air. He played Swamp Thing in that movie. So that was a pretty cool Cage reunion there.
The getaway pilot.
Yes, exactly. This movie really is very similar to Con Air in a lot of ways. We'll talk about that in a second, I think. And you've got the film's villain, Vincent Kinsey, played by Josh Lucas, who has been in a lot of films like American Psycho, Session 9, and Hulk, and more recently starred in The Mysteries of Laura on NBC. From there, Mark Valley from Boston Legal plays a cop named Fletcher, and Tonk Saed from Gilmore Girls plays someone named Peter. The film was written by...
some guy named Peter.
I did not remember who Peter was, and I've never seen Gilmore Girls, so I couldn't place the actor. So, but I knew he was a significant enough name where I felt like I should mention him. So he's in the movie. I don't know who Peter is, but somebody named Peter is in the movie, played by a guy from Gilmore Girls. Anyway, the film was written by David Guggenheim, not to be confused with Davis Guggenheim, the documentary filmmaker who made An Inconvenient Truth. Dave Guggenheim also wrote Safe House with Denzel Washington, and he was the creator of the TV series Designated Survivor with Kiefer Sutherland, which I think was just canceled recently. I'm not entirely sure about that.
I think so, yeah. Very recently. Yeah.
And Stolen was directed by Simon West, released just 1 month after his previous film, a little indie you might have heard of, called The Expendables 2. His next film would be 2015's Wild Card with Jason Statham. Most recently, he directed two films in 2017, Stratton with Dominic Cooper and Gunshy with Antonio Banderas. Now, Stolen barely played in theaters in the U.S. and was a box office bomb. It played about 140 theaters in its opening weekend and grossed about $300,000 before it was pulled from theaters after 2 weeks. It made a little more money overseas. On a budget of $15 million, the movie made about $17 million, and it currently holds a 16% on Rotten Tomatoes. So, not great all around. Yeah, but Stolen was released on September 14th, 2012. And if you, like most people, skipped it that weekend, you may have seen the fifth movie in the Resident Evil series, Resident Evil Retribution. Otherwise, you might have seen the 3D re-release of Finding Nemo that also came out that weekend. Or, if you were into the indie scene, a couple of movies also opened in limited release. Arbitrage, a thriller with Richard Gere and Susan Sarandon, and, quite possibly, Paul Thomas Anderson's best film, The Master, also came out that weekend.
Interesting.
Yeah, which I believe might feature the two best performances of the decade between Joaquin Phoenix and Philip Seymour Hoffman. They are both pretty incredible in that movie, and Amy Adams also pretty fucking great, too. We should just do a Master review real quick. I think we should just talk about that movie instead.
Yeah, it's a possible candidate for Complete Works Season 2, Paul Thomas Anderson.
I mean, he's only got like 8 movies, so it'll be a fast season.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I feel like that's what you're hoping for here, is just really short seasons from now on.
Yep.
But that's not going to happen. And the IMDb plot synopsis for Stolen reads, a former thief frantically searches for his missing daughter, who has been kidnapped and locked in the trunk of a taxi. Now, Mike, I feel like I'm already getting a sense of what your thoughts are on Stolen. What are your overall thoughts on this movie?
So this movie tries to, I feel like, you know, it has all of the flaws and symptoms of these ripoff movies. You know, it kind of gets like just everything wrong sort of about what the movie they're trying to rip off. Like if you look at Piranha versus Jaws, like it's, you're trying so hard and it's just not working.
Okay.
And it's the same kind of thing, right? For this movie. The thing that makes Taken so great, I think, because it's not, on one level, it's not a very good movie, right? Like, it's just a big, dumb, beat-em-up action movie.
Right.
But on another level, that's exactly what I want, and that's what everybody wants. And it does it really well, because it kind of plays into, Liam Neeson is not an action star at that point, right?
That was his first, like, real action role.
And it kind of withholds that from you, right? And John Wick sort of does this also. Where, granted, Keanu is an action star when John Wick comes out.
Right.
But it has a very quick first act. Nothing really happens as far as these characters and actors being action people, right? In Taken, it's sort of like, you know, him and his old buddies telling stories, but they don't really get into details.
Right.
And then the thing happens, and then all hell breaks loose. And it's amazing, and they're badasses. In this, it's Nick Cage. He's already an amazing badass because we watch him pull off this bank heist.
Yeah.
And it's not, I mean, it is sort of clever, but it also feels very weird and by luck that the police went in the wrong building. Like, I don't understand what that was. So, like, he's this master thief, and we're told over and over and over that he's this master thief. And then he just is a master thief, and, like, there's no change in characters, and, like, nothing really happens as far as his, like, progression in that, as that character. So I feel like that's a huge part. That's all I was thinking about, basically, was you did the thing wrong. Like, we're not supposed to know that he's this guy yet until the shit happens, and then we find out that he's got this very special set of skills.
Okay.
So that's, like, I don't know why I thought so hard about that through this movie, but I did, because this movie's really dumb and there's not much to think about. So I found something that I thought sounded deep enough to be angry about.
All right. Yeah, well, I think this podcast will go pretty much the same way the last few of these have gone, where it doesn't sound like you liked it that much, but I gotta say, kind of had some fun with this one.
that's fair.
I don't know. I think Cage is solid in the movie. I think the action overall is pretty solid. I think Josh Lucas, as the villain, is turning it up to 11.
Oh, my God.
And he's kind of amazing. And the movie is, like, yeah, it's absolutely ludicrous. I don't know. What more do you want? It's just an enjoyable, like, it's 90 minutes. It takes up very little of your time.
That's fair.
You know, I think it's got a fun score. Like, the score is not, like, the score is very loud and bombastic, and it just keeps going. It's over and over again.
It feels like the score of, like, an 80s heist movie. Like, it doesn't make sense, or, like, one of the Ocean's movies. Like, it doesn't fit with this action gritty kind of thing that it's trying to do. It's got a lot of horns and stuff, and it's super weird.
I mean, it feels completely out of place, but I enjoyed the presence of it.
Yeah.
Like, it was at least memorable, I thought, and so that kind of counts for something, right?
A little bit, you know.
But I don't know, to me, like, this was surprisingly, like, when I was watching it, I was like, okay, I'm gonna watch Stolen, it's this ripoff of Taken that Cage is in, like, whatever. But, like, surprisingly to me, this felt like one of the better Cage movies of this VOD era of his career. Like, especially coming after, like, Trespass and Seeking Justice, like, this feels like a masterpiece.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know?
Yeah. It does have a lot of fun Cage action. It doesn't really feel like he gets to be, like, it's, again, he, like, should have been the villain. Like,
I feel like we've said that over the last couple of these, I think, actually. We said that about Trespass, where Ben Mendelsohn's the one going crazy. And we said that about Seeking Justice, where Guy Pearce is the one who's playing it up and going over the top. And now we've got Josh Lucas, who I think is actually given, like, probably, maybe Ben Mendelsohn was given the best performances out of those three. But I think this is, like, the most, like, just scenery-chewing villain. And I had a blast watching him. Like, he was, like, you know, he's got this long hair and, like, scars all over. He's got this, like, fake metal leg that he's limping around with. It's like, this guy I want to watch more of. He's great.
Yeah. Whenever he's around, it's just, like, it's sort of like, this is good in a facepalm way, where, like, this is ridiculous. I can't believe this is actually happening. And yet, somehow, I'm intrigued because it's the weirdest fucking thing. And it's also, like, the most extreme version of, like, your former partner gone turned evil, like, you know what I mean? Like, gone off the deep end, where, like you said, he's got this long stringy hair, he's all beat up, and, like, he's cut his own fingers off to fake his death, and, like, And he used to be golden, and now he's a Picasso or whatever the hell his fucking line is. He's got the weirdest line reads in this movie.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic. But let's speak about Cage for a minute. What did you think of Nicolas Cage in this movie, Mike?
I feel like he feels like relatively subdued, I feel like, in this. He's still, you know, action star, jumping off things and shooting and running and jump and shoot man. Like, he's good, like, you know, he's doing that whole thing. But it feels a lot, it feels more in line with Seeking Justice's performance, where, I mean, it's not obviously not as subdued because this is an action movie.
Yeah.
But he doesn't really ham it up for the, like, to meet everybody else in this movie, I think. And, like, Danny Houston is, right? That's his name? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's also got the weirdest fucking lines. The script for this movie is bizarre.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like they're, like, he's doing it, like, he's kind of going, having fun, and Cage is sort of still playing straight, as far, you know, as far as, you know, hardened criminal straight can be. But yeah, I don't know, what do you think, Mike?
I think he's good. I think, it's, you know, reliable action hero Cage, with a little bit of quirk, throughout. I think at the beginning when he's doing the heist, you know, there's a little bit more of the Cage that I like a lot, where it's just like he's, doing a thing where, like, they're doing the ritual where they listen to CCR before every heist or whatever. Yeah. That's a fun detail. And then when he, you know, his daughter calls up during the heist, and he's doing, like, the caring father over the phone thing at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And he's, like, just, he's being very, like, gentle and, like, loving over the phone, like, while they're about to do this crazy heist. And, like, I thought that was pretty funny and, like, endearing. You know, he's, like, talking about, like, Care Bears or something, like, and that kind of thing.
Right.
And it's, like, it's just very, like, obvious, like, generic father-child stuff, I guess. But, like, I enjoyed that. And I think, you know, he's not going crazy over the top in this movie. And he totally could have played, like, the Josh Lucas role. I think that would have been...
Yeah.
But probably that would have been, like, an insane, like, top 10 Cage performance right there. But, like, but I think he's enjoyable in this movie. I think it sort of fits in with Con Air, where he's really not going over the top in that movie either. He's got a weird... He's got a weird accent, but I feel like Cage himself is very, like, subdued throughout that movie. He's, like, he's the rock that the insanity is bouncing off of in a weird way.
That's
in that
fair.
Movie. Because everybody else is going nuts. You got John Malkovich, and you've got the entire crew of Cons and Steve Buscemi and MC Gainey and all that. So I think this kind of falls in line with that and what he and Simon West did in that movie. I think they tried to kind of replicate that with this one. At least that's what I got from it. But, yeah, speaking of Con Air, I think this movie has a lot going on that's very similar to Con Air. And I think that might be intentional. I think they're trying to do, like, Con Air 2, that's completely unrelated to the original Con Air, though. You know, it's, you know, because, I mean, this movie is Cage as a guy who spends a long time in jail and wants to reconnect with his daughter. That is the backbone of Con Air, and it's the backbone of this movie, too. He even buys her a stuffed animal when he gets out of jail in this movie.
That's right. He doesn't get to say put down the bunny, though.
I know. I was kind of waiting for that moment, actually. I was hoping there would be, like, a more direct callback to Con Air.
That would have been amazing.
Like, put the bear down or whatever. But at the same time, the daughter this time around is, like, 15, so she didn't care about the stuffed bear all that much. So,
yeah,
I guess it doesn't really matter. But, yeah, I mean, what about you, Mike? How do you think this role fits into the roles that we've seen Cage play in other movies?
I think this kind of calls back a lot of movies, actually. I mean, obviously, Con Air.
Yeah.
Seeking Justice, in that, you know, that kind of, I think he's playing a rather straight man role as far as that goes. National Treasure, obviously, all his big action heist movies that he's done a lot of.
Sure, yeah.
This never comes close to being that kind of, even like when there are heists, and I think there's only like two or something, it never comes close to any of the like heist puzzle stuff that happens in National Treasure.
Yeah, fair enough. But, I mean, it's a very different kind of heist in those movies. Like, it's more like, you know, they're based on history and stuff. That's just like a normal, you know, feeling heist.
That's true. But I think, I mean, they're interesting in National Treasure a lot of times. You know what I mean?
And they're not in this one.
Yeah. You know, I don't, like... I mean that on two levels, I guess. One, I don't really care in this movie. And two, like... how they pull them off aren't interesting, whereas in National Treasure, there's lots of, you know, stuff happening that feel more akin to, like, the Ocean's 11 Ocean's heists.
That's interesting, because I feel like the heist in this movie was my favorite part of the movie. Because the first the opening, like, 20 minutes are just Cage and his crew and the heist gone wrong, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And so you spend a lot of time on that heist, and then you get
to... Is it that long?
It's like 15, 20 minutes, yeah.
Wow.
And then it's the whole heist, and then it's the car chase, and, you know, Vincent trying to shoot an old man, and Cage is like, no, we don't shoot old people. And And then Cage shoots Vincent, and they go off, and they ditch Cage, and Cage gets in the car chase and ditches the money. That all happens in, like, 20 minutes. So at that point, there's only, like, an hour and 10 minutes left of the movie. So really, the heist forms the entire first act. And I gotta say, I think those opening 20 minutes are a lot of fun. I think it's enjoyable watching Cage and his crew pull off this heist. And yeah, it's not as, like, artfully done as, like, the Ocean's movies or the National Treasure movies. But I think it's a pretty entertaining heist. And it's basically a different movie than the rest of the movie is, because the rest of the movie is the Taken ripoff, which we had come to expect from the title Stolen.
Yeah, and I didn't put it together until you mentioned it with the listening to CCR, Gone in 60 Seconds, right? They have to listen to Lowrider before they go out and steal all the cars.
Oh, yeah! This is like a Cage greatest hits movie in a weird way. It's kind of cool. Also, yeah, the New Orleans setting, which we mentioned before. So this movie is in New Orleans, which is just like Seeking Justice. Also, Zondalee and Sonny, and of course, Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. And there are probably more that I'm not thinking of.
But you got Zondalee, so that's the important one.
Yeah, Zondalee is the most important movie that we'll talk about on this entire podcast, obviously. But yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting that, like, I think we mentioned it in Seeking Justice, actually. It's like, wow, New Orleans has been in a lot of movies. And at this point, I'm like, wow, New Orleans has been in, like, a lot of these movies. Like, you know, there are a few recurring locations, right? Because Cage has showed up in Vegas a few times, with Queen in Las Vegas, and Honeymoon in Vegas, and Con Air, actually. But yeah, this movie really dives into the New Orleans setting too. I think this movie and Seeking Justice both kind of take advantage, and Bad Lieutenant also kind of take advantage of post-Katrina New Orleans. Yeah. They all kind of weave that into their story in some way. Vincent at one point, Josh Lucas's character, has a line where he's like, "The only good thing to happen to this town was the hurricane." It's like, Jesus Christ, this is a bad dude.
Yeah, in case you weren't sure, him drugging and kidnapping a 15-year-old girl, had to hammer it home.
He's also pro-hurricane.
Yeah, paid for by a big hurricane.
And I will say, this movie ends with Nicolas Cage driving a flaming car, as all Nicolas Cage movies must.
Yes, I did notice that too, actually.
Yeah, it felt like, you know, the Ghost Rider drive angry Cage coming out and driving, like, the flaming car right into the lake. I was like, yes, hell yes.
I'm in.
Give me that. So yeah, I mean, I enjoyed a lot of this movie. I mean, the action's over the top and silly, and Cage is doing solid action hero stuff. And really, I think the main reason you should watch this movie is for Vincent. I think he is just a terrific mustache twirling villain. And it's pretty great. But what are the moments or scenes that stood out to you in Stolen, Mike?
Well, the flaming car, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
And then actually the second heist where they just melt the gold. It felt like the weirdest, like the most dangerous version. Like, that's already a dangerous heist. But like, I'm just going to stand under this hole and melt gold back down into the hole right towards me. Like, you're going to die. What are you doing?
Right. Yeah, I was watching that and I was like, I'm not a science person. But I don't know if gold melts that fast. It melted real fast.
I do know gold is, like, one of the softest and weakest of the, like, metals. So
oh, really?
It might. Okay. But I don't know if it's that fast. Because it's, like, instant.
Okay, basically. Yeah, it really just happens, like, immediately. And I was like, what's that? Like, I didn't even, like, process what was happening at first. I was just like, oh, now there's liquid gold somehow. Wait, what?
Hey, oh, interesting.
Yeah, and then they, you know, when they get the gold back, it's like they, you know, kind of solidify it in the water or whatever. But it's, like, it's misshapen now, and I'm like, does that... I'm not sure if that would depreciate the gold in quality or anything like that. If it's still gold, so maybe it wouldn't. But, like, I feel like there's a reason we got to have it in gold bars, right? Like, that's...
I think that's just, like, a standard so that they're easy to transport and stuff.
I guess.
But we're not goldologists, so we don't know.
True. We're not seasoned in the study of gold. So we'll let that one slide, I guess. But yeah, I thought that that heist was actually pretty fun. I like the way it happens where, like, you know, Kate, they steal the gold perfectly. Like, it goes off without a hitch, despite having no time to do this. Despite, like, you know, where did they get the equipment to do this? Like, I don't know. And they have, like, no discussion about their plan ahead of time.
Right.
You know? Malin Ackerman's like, oh, well, how'd you figure out how to do this so fast? And he's like, I had 8 years to plan it or whatever. But, like, you know, what if they moved the gold in that 8 years?
I'm saying everything's the exact same.
Yeah. It's just very weird that it happened that way. But then Cage gets to keep some gold at the end, so, you know, good for him.
Yeah, that was nice.
Speaking of, I did kind of like the relationship that he had with Danny Houston throughout the movie. Like, Danny Houston's like the FBI agent who dislikes Cage and brought him in, but also he respects him because
he's the John Cusack.
Yeah, exactly. He's the John Cusack in Con Air. But the difference in that and the difference in Con Air is that Cage isn't doing anything wrong in that movie. I mean, he did at first. He killed a guy. But right. Lest we forget, it's in the trailer for the movie where John Cusack is like, "It's like so he got into a bar fight and he killed a guy. Could have happened to any of us." That's like an actual line from Con Air.
who could forget?
Who among us has not killed a guy in a bar fight? You know. But yeah, so Danny Houston's kind of the John Cusack in this movie, and. It's they have like this playful relationship a little bit at least. And I think it's Danny Houston who has the line at the beginning when Cage first gets out of jail, and it's such a weird line, and I was like shocked that he said it. where it's like, "Hey, how was jail? Hope you got raped every day."
No, it's the other dude.
It's the other dude who says that. Still, that was a weird ass line.
Yeah, to throw in super the movie. Aggressive right out of the gate.
But it really cements who those characters are then, right? Because Fletcher, the other FBI agent, is the guy who doesn't like Cage and wants to bring him back into jail. And Danny Houston's like, "Let's give him a chance." And like,
yeah,
all that. And then that goes through the very end when Cage is like, pretending to get rid of the golds, and Danny Houston's watching them and they think he got rid of the gold. And Danny Houston's like, crossed his arms, being like, "Good for you, Nicolas Cage." And they, and they drive off in their boat.
Yeah, I did actually really like that scene at the very end. Just the FBI agents on the boat, because I thought it was really funny and weird.
Yeah.
I do have one gripe that kept happening, and it's the weirdest gripe. Do you think people in New Orleans say Fat Tuesday instead of Mardi Gras? Like, why? I don't understand why they kept saying Happy Fat Tuesday instead of Mardi Gras.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Is Mardi Gras like copyrighted? Like what? Like I don't understand. Ooh, what that was.
That can't possibly be copyrighted.
I don't know.
But yeah, I don't know. Maybe because Mardi Gras is probably like it's an American thing, but maybe like outside of America, people don't know it as much, right?
I feel like that's a pretty well-known thing. Maybe I don't know. Maybe not.
Maybe I don't know. Well, because Fat Tuesday people know Fat Tuesday people know as a religious holiday, right? Because it's the day before Ash Wednesday.
Yeah.
So maybe like outside like. Maybe outside of America. I don't know. I do not know the answer.
I guess I don't understand. It was just the weirdest thing.
But speaking of, I mean, I think it's interesting that this movie kind of takes place on Fat Tuesday, and Cage is using like a Fat Tuesday as like a cover for getting rid of people, the FBI tailing him and stuff. There's one point where he picks up a mask and puts the mask on, and they're like, "Oh, we lost him!" But he's like, I feel like they watched him put on the mask, and then.
Following him from behind, and he puts on a mask that covers his face, and they lose him. Like, I don't understand.
Right. And it's not even like it's still you can still recognize his profile, his body. Like he's wearing the same clothes. His hair's not covered up. It's clearly Cage wearing a gold mask. But for some reason, they're like, "Oh darn, he got away again."
Yeah, that Wiley. Kate, what's his name? Montgomery?
Will Montgomery, yes. It's a very boring action hero name, I will say that.
Yeah.
It's no Stanley Goodspeed, is all I'll say.
Exactly.
That's an action hero name right there.
But, what scene stood out to you, Mike? I don't know if you gave us any.
I mean, we've mentioned a couple, I think, at this point. But
that's true.
I will say, I think Cage's elevator sneak attack on the FBI agents was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that scene a lot, where Cage goes to the FBI to try to get them to believe him so that they'll help him find his daughter. And they don't believe him because they're like, "You just want to get your money back, Nicolas Cage." And he's like, "No."
Yeah.
So when he's leaving the building, I think it's Fletcher and one other FBI agent is escorting him out. And Cage just like fucking throat punches him. Like in the... like immediately,
Russo's stole it for Captain America.
Yes. Yeah, the whole elevator scene in Winter Soldier that's taken right from Stolen. They stole it from Stolen.
That sons of bitches.
But yeah, Cage just like attacks them in the throat. They immediately fall down, and then the best part about it is that we see that entire thing, and we watch Cage walk out of the elevator. And then when they come back to the elevator, they're handcuffed to the railing, but we never saw that happen.
Yeah. What is continuity, though?
Right.
Do we need it? We don't need it.
We don't need it. It's not a thing. Other stuff that I thought was a cool movie. I mean, I liked, Cage kind of, throughout the movie, Cage is trying to figure out where, like, what's going on. Like, Vincent's still alive. They tell him, they tell Cage that Vincent is dead because he faked his own death. And so Vincent kidnaps his daughter, and then Cage goes back to his old crew, and he sees Malin Ackerman in the bar for a bit, and then he goes to find Hoyt, and he gets into, like, a shootout there, and, you know, they fight for a while, and I thought the fight was pretty cool, and then Hoyt gets killed by the FBI, and it's like, well, bye, Hoyt.
Yeah, we hardly knew ye.
Yeah, exactly. And then Cage leaves and gets in a taxi, and I think one of my favorite things is that Cage has to have what a GPS is explained to him. I don't know if you remember that scene.
I do.
Because he's been in prison for 8 years, and this movie came out in 2012. So theoretically, Cage went to jail in 2004, and I'm pretty sure we had GPSs by then.
Yeah. They weren't as widespread, though.
Right, but, like, they existed. Like, it wasn't like...
I don't know how technology works in that era.
We lived through that era, Mike.
Yeah, but we were, like... We lads then.
We were like 10 or 11. Like we were aware of the world, and I'm positive we had a GPS at my house by the time it was 2004.
Okay.
But maybe I'm lying. I don't know.
I don't know. But we'll find out, I guess.
But either way, I thought it was just entertaining to watch Cage try to figure out what a GPS was and have somebody explain it to him.
And then the scene after that when he gets the wrong taxi, like when he gets the medallion code or whatever, and he gets the ring like it's some other dude. That was the weirdest thing. Like, there are stickers over his medallion. Like, I don't get what that was.
Or how that even happened, yeah.
Yeah, like, what?
I want to give a shout-out to the funny taxi dispatch guy, actually. I thought he was entertaining. Where Cage, like, hijacks one guy's taxi looking for Vincent, and so the guy is, like, talking back to his boss, like, trying to find out info or whatever. He's like, oh, yeah, he stole money from you. I'll go confront him. And the guy's like, oh, you would do that for me? And like, he talks like a secondary Star Wars character. Like, it's very weird.
God. Yes.
Like rejecting
somebody that would mind trick.
Yeah. Which is basically what they do in this movie, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, the ending fight between Cage and Vincent I thought was a lot of fun. Obviously, we mentioned the flaming car going into the water. We neglected to mention that Vincent basically turns into Jason Voorhees at a certain point.
Yeah, I did have that exact same thought.
Where, you know, he's getting, like, stabbed, he's getting shot, and he's not dying, and then at one point he literally jumps out of the water like Jason does and grabs Nicolas Cage.
And he's, like, on fire, so he's, like, all burnt and stuff. It looked exactly like that.
It was pretty awesome to watch. I was pretty on board with the movie for that. But, yeah, and then the movie kind of pretends that Cage dies for a second, right? He gets shot in the fight, but he defeats Vincent, and he saves his daughter, he gets her out of the trunk, and then, you know, Cage gets shot, and it's, like, it kind of fades away, and then, you know, for a second, like, it makes you think, like, oh, what if Cage died, even though, obviously, like, he wasn't going to. But then it even has, like, the daughter driving somewhere, and they pass a cemetery on the way in the background, so it's like, oh, man, maybe the Cage really did die, and then, like, a second later, he's, like, coming out of the door, like, hey, guys!
I'm alive!
I'm Nicolas Cage! And... so yeah, that was a shocker, but what the twist indeed. But yeah, I enjoyed that. Otherwise, you know, I can't think of that many other scenes that really stood out to me. I enjoy most of the movie. I mean, it's only like 90 minutes. It's a quick watch. And maybe it's just because we just watched Trespass and Seeking Justice. So my standards are lower.
I think we're going to have to be on this level for the rest of the podcast. Cause like, until we get up to 2018, I don't think it's much better.
There are definitely bright spots, Mike. There are definitely bright spots. There are good stuff. There is good stuff on the horizon. There's just a lot of dark spots as well. Actually, speaking of the bright spots, Mandy on Blu-ray just arrived at my house today.
Congratulations.
Excited. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for keeping me in your thoughts at this time, because I'm never leaving my house again. I'm watching Mandy nonstop. But yeah, that is Stolen. I can't think of any other big scenes that stood out to me, Mike, unless you've got anything else you want to talk about.
No, not really. Okay. It's kind of like, there's nothing to really go over.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. I mean, that is Stolen. I think the main reason to watch this is Josh Lucas as Vincent, who is pretty amazing as a villain. And also the first 20 minutes are also pretty entertaining, too. So that is Stolen, and now let's move on into our Letterboxd reviews. Mike, I've got a one-star review here. Most of these are pretty rough, actually. Most of these are not great reviews. So here's a one-star review. Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to lament the career of Mr. Nicolas Cage.
Wow.
After a long sick bed suffering from ghost rider-itis, trespassophilius, and a host of other madness-inducing bouts of mediocrity, Stolen has finally finished it off. It is dead as a doornail and can finally find its much-deserved rest in the afterlife, where only his good films are shown. Rest in peace, amen.
Wow.
Yeah, an obituary for Nicolas Cage's career. Very sad. Here's a 2-star review of Stolen. I won't claim that Stolen is a good movie, but there's something inherently likable about a movie whose villain is a one-legged, slang-talking white guy from Nolans, and whose motive for revenge is stated thusly, "You destroyed the only thing I truly loved. Me!"
That's an actual line.
That is an actual line from the movie, and I'm amazed that we didn't mention that, actually, because that was amazing. This is the reunion of Nicolas Cage and his Con-era director, Simon West, and while it's neither as hilarious nor bombastic as that one, it's pretty damn funny. Weird as it might be to say, there's a kind of purity to what West does. I believe he wants to make silly, entirely unpretentious action movies just like these, and on that point, he succeeds. The man can shoot a good car chase, too. Cage himself is in normal mode, but that's alright. Josh Lucas has no problem filling the crazy quotient all by himself. Dude is on some next-level shit and or cocaine in this movie, beating up Australians after lecturing them on New Orleans history, shouting about how he's a freaking Picasso... And generally being a raving fucking lunatic. I had fun watching this movie. It's not good, but that hardly matters. And to me, I feel like that's the closest to my feeling on Stolen that we'll get yeah. to today. Here's a 2.5-star review. I was a Golden Boy baby. Now I'm a freaking Picasso. Mardi Gras, check. One-legged, wig-wearing, B-movie villain, check. Nicolas Cage, check. Nicolas Cage driving a burning taxi into a body of water after being shot and stabbed. Check. Danny Houston wearing one of the most ridiculous hats in cinema history.
I actually wanted to mention the hat.
Did you really?
Yeah.
It's a pretty great hat. Got to say. Mm-hmm. It's good. Check.
Like this weird bucket fedora hat.
Josh Lucas going all X-Men Origins Wolverine and pouncing out of some water. Check. Here I am ticking another one off of my Nicolas Cageography list. This film has the strangest and most obscure plot I've ever known. It's almost as though Taken and every other action movie from the past 20 years had a host of illegitimate love children, and this is that spawn.
Jesus.
My reason for watching this was to find what part of the crazy Nick Cage spectrum this belonged to. To my surprise, Josh Lucas completely overshadowed him, and I'm fine with that. Here's a short one, a 4-star review. Of Stolen. Yet another documentary on how Nicolas Cage has stolen my heart.
Wow.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Poetic.
Right? I like that one. Here's a 3-star review of Stolen. I see a lot of 1-star reviews for this movie, and all I can think is, these people didn't just watch Seeking Justice and Trespass right before this. Compared to those, this is a fairly enjoyable movie. I'd like to be clear, I did not write this review.
Are you sure? You can't read your own reviews, Rick.
Nick Cage reunites with Con-era director Simon West after 15 years, and it feels like old times, mainly because they reuse stuff from that movie. MC Gainey, the nickname Diamond Dog, and Nicolas Cage buying his estranged daughter a stuffed bear after he gets out of prison. This appears to be Nick Cage's 3rd movie in a row filmed in New Orleans, assuming Ghost Rider 2 is made before these that I watched today. And Stolen uses the city the best. It is the 2nd movie today where Nick Cage says his favorite color is purple, and the 2nd to feature close-ups of street performers tap dancing.
Interesting.
Josh Lucas turns in a Nick Cage-worthy performance, Mark Valley is fun as an idiot FBI agent, and Nick Cage actually seems alive in this one. Nick's job/appearance, the world's greatest thief, classic Nick Cage. And best Nick moment, the way he says pancakes early on in the film.
Yeah. How about that?
Finally, I got one more here, Mike. And it's a 1-star review of Stolen, also 1 sentence long. The only thing here that's really been stolen is my time.
I thought it was going to be my heart again.
Oh, nope. all right, so Stolen. I would say not great, you know, but I found it pretty enjoyable. I think it's a solid B action movie. Mike, it sounds like you were not as big of a fan as I am.
Yeah.
Which seems to be the pattern these podcasts are going lately.
It's the same. It's that, and then by the end of it, I'm on your side. Like, it wasn't good. Like, whatever. It was only 90 minutes, though. There's some decent enough action, so, like, sure, I guess.
All right, fair enough. Sure, I guess. A ringing endorsement from Mike DiGrecio. Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at MD Film Blog on Twitter.
And you can find me at M Smith Film Blog on Twitter and all of our podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Thank you so much for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That is Mike DiGrecio. If you are listening to this review of our podcast on iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review. You can help support this podcast and Filmbook by taking part in our Patreon campaign. You can find our Patreon campaign page at patreon.com/filmbook. Now, any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email, because we produce just so many different ones, it's hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Now join us for the next Complete Works, where Nicolas Cage gets his most high-profile voice acting gig yet, Mike, with DreamWorks Animation's The Croods!
Oh, shit.
Yeah!
I didn't know that was next.
The Croods is next, Mike. We are talking that movie. Have you seen The Croods?
I have. It's actually, like, well, I won't spoil my thoughts, I guess.
I have not seen The Croods, actually. That's one that I feel like I wanted to see around the time it came out and just never got around to.
Yes.
So I'm excited to check it out. And I feel like it should be a fun episode. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so we'll see how that goes. Plus, you can keep an eye out for Film Bookcast, where we're talking Suspiria 2018. Very excited about that movie, Mike. I just watched the original for the first time. A couple weeks ago, a 4K restoration at the theater near my house was showing it, and yeah, it was pretty dope. So I'm pretty excited to see Luca Guadagnino and his crew have got in store for the new one. Thanks so much for listening, guys, and thanks for getting in the cage.
Boom! Nick Cage, motherfucker! Boom! Nick Cage, motherfucker! Boom! Nick Cage, motherfucker!